This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Kelly, and I'm incredibly proud to be an Over the Influence community member. When I became a member, I got a double dose of the podcast every week, now that I had access to the premium pod, and I also loved the in-person Zoom calls, basically just getting to know like-minded people. Personally, it's been just over a year since I changed my relationship with alcohol, and I've honestly never felt better. My head is clearer, my relationships with friends and family members are better, and overall in life I just have way more energy. Thankfully, I never had a rock bottom, but Over the Influence made me realise I didn't need one. It's never too late to change for the better. So thanks for being there for me, OTI, and keep up the great work.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It is fantastic to have you listening. If you are maybe discovering us for the first time, a quick introduction or reintroduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I'm quite excited. Well, for two reasons. One, because of our amazing podcast guest today. But two, I've got one of those mega milestones coming up. And it still bowls me over. It still hits me for six. I don't count the days anymore. I'm now like counting years. Who'd have flipping thunk it? In a couple of weeks' time, when this podcast episode is released, I'm going to be 5 years alcohol free. Five years. And it still makes me laugh because one, who would want to give up drinking? Because life would be crap. Two, I didn't want to be sober. I wanted to carry on drinking, you know, until the day I died. In fact, this is really tragic, and I'm not actually sure I've shared this before. You know, when you write your will, excuse me, this is really quite grim. I've got something in there on this list of wishes that says everybody must wear bright colours and there's free rosé wine for everybody.
Oh, God.
I need to sort that out. I really do need to sort it out. 5 years, alcohol-free. It's the best decision I ever made in my life. I'm 49 years old, used to drink very, very regularly. It's irrelevant how much these days it really is. If it's too much for you, it's too much. Hands down, best life-changing decision I made back end of summer 2018. That was long-winded. Ben, sorry, I'm just getting a bit giddy again. I'm just getting a little bit carried away. I don't do this on my own. Ben Anderson.
Hello. Sharon's giddy because one of our favourite ever guests is back on OTI. Yes, we love it. My name's Ben. I've got a milestone coming up next week. Shaz, I'm getting married and I'm going to be a sober groom.
Yes.
We've got an alcohol-free cocktail and an alcoholic cocktail to choose from. There's actually loads of people because we've been going for the table plans. Quite a lot of AF people are there. And it's not like people are involved in Over the Influence. Obviously, you've got people who are, you know, choosing to, you know, not drink for the time being. But also, there's a guy there, my mate Alex, who's been alcohol-free now for 8 years.
Amazing.
I think he started it off because he was on a real health kick and then just carried it on. You're sitting next to my mate John. He's a top lad. I think he's committed to about 2 years.
Can't wait.
Now.
Have you warned John? Have you told him?
Yes. And he's still coming, which is good.
So, good. That's good. That's really good.
But yeah, can't wait to be married. Can't wait to do it. Alcohol free. Let's stop talking and chat to Claire Pawley. Hi, Claire Pawley. She's back on the podcast.
So happy to be here. And huge congratulations for next week. And I have to tell you that, you know, as you were talking there, I was just thinking, I wish I'd done my wedding day without drinking because it would have been so much less stressful for a start. And also I would have remembered more of it. You know, I mean, looking back now, the whole thing just seems like a complete blur. And I loved it. It was one of the best days of my life. But I think it would have been even better if I hadn't been drinking. And, you know, I would never have believed I'd be saying that.
So many people have said that to me since they found out, you know, I'm going to be doing the wedding and I'm alcohol free. And like people obviously within Over the Influence in the community, but loads of people, I wish I'd, you know, just had a few less or whatever.
Yeah. Also, I think there's something lovely about, you know, I remember waking up on my first day as a married woman with a chronic hangover. And it would have been really nice to spend my first day married sort of feeling great rather than feeling like shit.
I do get it in the sense of, you know, I used to do it as well when you're a bit nervous about a social situation. You know, what does society offer you? Well, you can, you know, go for a run, get to the gym, do some exercise, do something positive and healthy. You can take a break, do some meditation, do some reading, or you can go for the easy option and have a drink, which is what I used to do. And I do feel a bit nervous about next week, not about marrying Jem. That's the best decision I've ever made and hugely confident in that. But I do feel nervous about, to be honest, socializing all day. That's the thing that's kind of getting me a bit, just thinking that from the moment I wake up, all the groomsmen will be there, to the moment I go to bed and there's like 100 people there. Shaz, if I don't say hello to you next Thursday, is that all right? Can we just keep our conversations for like just...
Yeah, it's fine. I'll be on the periphery, okay?
I'm joking.
I won't mither. Claire, mine and Ben's relationship is very much based on, well, alcohol-free life as a kickoff, but I mither Ben a lot.
I do.
I really do. And I've already made this decision. It's like, no, I'm coming to enjoy your wedding day, and I'm so chuffed to bits to be there. I absolutely cannot wait. And I just want to watch you be the best sober husband, the best dad to... I get to see Leo again, Claire. I get to give Leo little cuddles. Not so bothered about bed. No, joking. I absolutely can't wait. And yeah, don't worry about me is what I'm saying. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'll talk to John. Don't worry.
I do know what you mean about socialising all day because, you know, I'm happy socialising sober now. It was a thing that probably took me the longest to get my head around. But I do get exhausted by it. And I think that is always masked. When you're drinking, you're probably exhausted by it too, but it's masked by the alcohol. So you don't realize, you sort of postpone that feeling to the next day. But, you know, being in constantly chatting to big crowds of people is exhausting. And what I would suggest to you is just make sure you give yourself a few bits of time out during the day. Just, you know, just don't feel bad about going away just for 15 minutes and just, you know, just taking some time and relaxing and then going back into the fray. You know, there's nobody will mind it. But nobody will notice if you disappear just for a short while. So I would just build in a few moments like that where you can just sort of have some time out and then go back in.
That's fabulous advice. And thank you very much. I do feel, Sharon, let's stop talking about the wedding. I can update you because we've got Claire Pooley here and we need to talk. Just catch up. It's been, well, we've seen you recently on a member Zoom, an OTI member Zoom, Claire, which is fabulous. My stag do Zoom, actually.
It was brilliant.
But it's been years.
Oh, look, who's here?
Yeah.
It's Claire Pooley on Ben's stag.
Yeah, it's so
good.
Cool. But it's been years since we've spoken to you on the podcast. Sharon, I've started this new job. I'm back in radio and I'm back in that kind of, there's always someone new listening mode. So can we imagine that someone's brand new to alcohol-free life? This is the first time they've clicked on Over the Influence and they don't know who Claire Pooley is. Sharon, should we do the big intro?
I don't believe that for a minute. I don't believe that for a minute. But no, it's a really good point that actually. Just before we do the big intro, I am also in radio. Okay. And I had some guests in the studio yesterday and we were talking about gossiping. And one of the books that sticks in my mind, as well as reading Claire's, one of the other books that I read, first of all, was The Unexpected Joy of Being Sober, Catherine Gray. And in that bit, there's a bit in her book and it talks about... removing alcohol also removed gossiping. The two sort of go hand in hand, and it was fascinating to read it. And as I was explaining this on air with my guest yesterday, I used the term quitlet. So I said, and if you don't know what that is, it's books to help you maybe if you're sober curious or starting out in an alcohol-free journey. A listener messaged the show, and it's a listener that I know is on his own alcohol-free journey. You know, he's had some ups and downs with it. I think he's on about day 60 something now, and I love the fact that he messages in and he said, oh, thanks for that, I didn't know what quitlet was. And you sort of assume, don't you, that we've been doing this quite a while now, that everybody knows there are books out there, everybody knows what quitlet is, you know, there's all these podcasts and sober community. Not everybody does. So I love your point there, Ben, that somebody could be, you know, well listening to this for the very, very first time. And if that is you, Big up your bad self. Welcome to Over the Influence. This is the most rambling intro we have ever done in the history of the podcast.
Yeah, it is.
We started like half an hour ago. We've not really introduced our guests properly yet. It gives us great pleasure to welcome back to the podcast the one and only Claire Pooley. I'm going to say Claire, author of The Sober Diaries, of course, because that's where it started for me reading your books. But you've been writing nonstop for ages now. In fact, are you on a break now where you've just finished another edit?
Yeah, I've just finished the main edits for my third novel, which comes out in May. Going sober has sort of created a whole new career for me, as well as a whole new, you know, a whole new life. So, and it does that for so many people, I find. I've met so many people who quit drinking and have gone on to, you know, to fulfill dreams that they had when they were teenagers and thought would never happen. And they do. So, yay.
Is it boring, Claire? You keep logging on, you keep looking at your screen, you go, oh, still in the top 10. It's still there. And didn't you have two books in the top 10 recently on a famous online bookseller?
Two in the top 100, top 100 on Amazon. No, it doesn't get boring. I get boring for you, it doesn't get boring for me.
Because it is something, you know, you start, was The Sober Diaries, was that your first published book?
Yeah, it was. You know, I mean, I started writing The Sober Diaries 8.5 years ago when, well, effectively, it wasn't a book initially, it was a blog. I started writing a blog called Mummy Was a Secret Drinker. And I didn't do it with the idea that anyone would read it. I certainly didn't do it thinking it would ever get published. It was purely my therapy. It was my own ramblings to myself and a way of getting everything off my chest. Because, you know, we sort of forget that back then the world was very, very different and people didn't talk about quitting drinking. It was a really shameful thing. You know, people would go to Alcoholics Anonymous maybe, but, you know, the clue is in the name, it's anonymous. You know, people didn't talk about the fact that they were quitting drinking. So I felt really, really alone back then. And, you know, the only alcohol-free drink, adult drink, was Beck's Blue. So The Sober Diaries is filled with references to Beck's Blue. It looks like they sponsored me, but they absolutely didn't. It was the only drink I could find. Whereas now there are hundreds. So now there are sober influencers all over the place, and people are very loud and proud about it. And that makes such a massive difference, I think, the fact that you don't have to keep it all to yourself anymore.
Could you have imagined, Claire, like 8.5 years on now, talking about writing your third novel?
No, you know, there's a bit in The Sober Diaries where I talk about, you know, the different techniques that I'd been reading about as ways of getting over cravings. And one of them was to imagine yourself in your happy place, right? So I was writing, and, you know, this was in the book, you know, I was talking about how I was imagining my happy place, and my happy place was being at the launch of my soon to be best-selling novel, surrounded by all my friends and family. And that was what I used to imagine, you know, in those really dark days when I was still sort of thinking about drink every 5 minutes. And, you know, and then it happened. And, you know, I remember sort of standing there at the launch of my soon to be best-selling novel saying, you know, I've done it. I'm in my happy place. And I would never have got there if I'd still been drinking. I wouldn't have had the time. I wouldn't have had the energy. I wouldn't have had the courage. I wouldn't have had the creativity. There's just no way I could have achieved that.
Claire, I want to talk about society in a bit, because I think, you know, your viewpoint on it, having been on this journey for a while, and as you just said, you know, it was a very different place when you decided to start doing this, the world, you know, and the, you know, the shameful aspects around it, and because it is now quite a joyful thing to do and it's a celebrated thing to do. I'd love to talk about that shift, but before we do, tell us then kind of how your last few years have been, because we spoke to you, God, was it 2020, maybe the last time we actually
it
had you officially
20,
on the podcast?
Actually. Possibly, yeah.
I can't remember. I can't remember when it was. It was a while back. And, you know, I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, when you were talking, Sharon, about counting years, you know, I do remember so vividly counting minutes and certainly counting days. And, you know, counting down to 100 days where, you know, I I was led to believe things were starting to better, which indeed they did. But, you know, it seemed like each day was really long and really hard. And now not only am I counting years, but I keep forgetting, I forget which year I'm on. And I even forget my soberversary from time to time. You know, it's like, oh, my God, it was last week and I completely forgot.
When is it, as a matter of interest, Claire? Sorry to interrupt there. I'm curious to know.
March 2nd will be, so next March 2nd will be my 9 years.
9 years. Amazing. You're catching up to Andy Ramage. He's about that, isn't he now? Something like that.
he and I we quit around the same time, as did Catherine Gray. Actually, she was the year before me, I think.
And William Porter as well. I think he's on a similar sort of time scale. Seven, oh,
it's,
eight.
It's a good cohort, that, isn't it? Just the names.
Bad,
that
not a bad crew, isn't it? Dropping them in there, all these big names.
Yeah, so what, since I, to answer your question, what I've been up to since then, yeah, I mean, these days I fit a huge amount into my life, and you know, I look back at the drinking days, and you know, I didn't do a huge amount apart from, you know, bring up my kids and fit in drinking wherever I could, and you know, a bit of work wherever I could, but now I fit huge amounts in. So, you know, I've done, since then, I've done lots of travel. I've published one more book, written another one, and I've been really busy, but in a good way.
And of course, you know, started off with a book about removing alcohol, but now you are writing. That's just the start of the journey, isn't it? You are a fully fledged author, best-selling author. I think we spoke just before the People on Platform 5 came out. I think that's the last time we caught up.
Oh, right. Okay.
So it was just before.
That came out, the original hardback came out about 18 months ago.
Right.
So, yeah.
But since then, it's just, you know, I don't really know how it works with authors. Like, do the offers come in? Do you have to go out and pitch once you've had like a best-selling novel? Like, how does that?
Oh, no, I have an agent who does all that sort right. of all that sort of selly stuff, you know. Yeah. I just write. So.
But you've done that non-stop since the People on Platform 5 came out.
Yeah, I mean, it's my new addiction, really. I think when you quit drinking, it leaves a real sort of hole in your life, really, because, you know, if you think about how much time you used to spend sort of drinking, thinking about drinking, recovering from drinking, you know, it's huge amounts of time. And, you know, when you quit, you need to find something to do that fills that hole. And I find that often what people choose to do is the thing that they loved doing when they were young, and often it's something they've completely forgotten about. So, you know, I had this lovely email from this woman who said that you know, she read my book and had heard me talk about sort of, you know, looking back to when you were a child, and how I believe that when you quit drinking, it's like coming full circle. It's not like a linear journey, it's a circular journey. You often end up coming back to the beginning. And she thought about what she loved when she was a child, and she'd loved riding horses, and she hadn't ridden a horse for 30 years or something. So she went to a local stables, took up riding again, loved it so much that she ended up buying her own horse, and then turning it into a whole sort of new career. She, you know, she did riding lessons, taught other people how to ride. You know, it was a whole new life for her. And people, so many people do that. They end up sort of filling that hole with something that made them passionate all those years ago, but they'd forgotten.
Love that. I absolutely love it. I can relate to all of that. And I'm just thinking, Ben, about some of the people in our community, the stuff that they've started doing. I mean, we laugh a lot, Claire, about some of the, like, the mad hobbies and pastimes that people take up. You know, somebody.
We've got forest bathers, haven't we? Forest bathers and cold water dippers.
I tell you what I did. I don't think I've shared this yet. On Sunday night, for the first time in my life, I went to a sound bath, a gong bath.
Never I really want to do that.
Done it before. Oh, Claire, you must go. You must do it. If you'd have told me 5 years ago, Shaz, Sunday night, 90 minutes, you're going to be signing up for a gong bath in your local town in these, like, relaxation rooms, and I said, get lost. Give me a rosé.
Is it got a good name? Is it like Gonging in Garston?
No, it's not. No. It was, what was it called? I can't remember what it was called. I don't know. It just appeared on my social media feeds, and I thought, you know what? That is the sort of stuff I would have scoffed at years ago. Who does that sort of rubbish? I went along, and I think the best bit about it all was the fact that I didn't speak for 90 minutes and nobody knew that was actually physically possible. Did it? Nailed it? Really, really good. And going back to what you said then, Claire, about the stuff you used to enjoy when you were younger, I love that. Just picture it, that whole circular journey of going back to who you were before alcohol started to stain everything and spoil everything and squash your dreams and squash the things that, that make you sparkle. Ben, you know, he'll laugh at this. It was about this time last year. I ended up joining, quite by accident, a local comedy musical society and was on the stage taking part in Calendar Girls. Best sort of 6 months of my life. It was hilarious. At school, I used to love doing productions and things like that. I wouldn't do that while I was a drinker. One, couldn't be bothered. Two, who does that sort of thing? Three, you know, I'd much rather be getting drunk. Remove that booze, Claire. And it literally is, isn't it? You can try anything again. Just go for it.
And you know, the other thing I've discovered is that, you know, when you drink, it makes you very lazy about ways to you socialise. So, you know, if when I was going out in the evening, the only thing I would ever do is go out to a restaurant or go out to a pub or maybe, you know, maybe a club, you know, when I was younger. But, you know, that was it. That was sort of, you know, everything revolved around the fact that you would just sit and drink and talk. And when you take alcohol out of the mix, it makes you much more inventive about the way you socialize with people. So now I quite frequently meet people for dog walks. You know, I walk all over the place with friends, you know, talking for hours and hours. I go to the theater a huge amount, which I've completely stopped doing. And I absolutely love the theater. It's such a joy. You know, I go to art galleries. I go to concerts. You know, I sort of, you know, I've been to more... You know, I've been to more live music and more live productions and comedy shows and all that sort of stuff in the last 2 or 3 years than probably in the previous 30. So, you know, it just makes you think a bit harder about how you want to spend your time, and as a result, it makes the way that you live often so much richer.
We've got an amazing community member who put on his LinkedIn at the start of the year a lot of his work socializing, but I suppose it was, you know, classified as, well, yeah, entertaining clients, business deals were done in the pub, and he put a big thing on LinkedIn at the start of the year, say, just so you know, if you want to have conversations about business, always up for it, but let's do it while having a run, let's do it while going for a walk, let's do it, you know. And so many people have responded really positively to it and gone, what an amazing idea.
You have great conversations with people when you're moving. It's a really, it's a really interesting sort of psychological phenomenon that if you're walking or running alongside somebody, so you don't have eye contact, it makes you much more honest about your conversations than when you're sitting opposite somebody. And when you're not drinking, it makes your conversations much deeper because you're not just sitting there gossiping. Back to your point from earlier, you talk about things that really matter. So you know, I think it can really improve your relationships too.
I think being active is a really important tip, isn't it? But not as in kind of being active in the movement side of it, being active and, like you were saying, finding ways to fill the gaps that drinking does leave, because you'd be in the pub or you'd be waking up the next day at 11 o'clock rather than kind of springing out of bed like we all do. So people, not me, but I've got a 10-month-old baby and don't spring very often. If I can stay in bed, I'll be there. But do you know what I mean? There are kind of obvious, that is one of the things I think that you don't necessarily think about when you remove alcohol when you're first starting out, but there are actual gaps of time, and being active and being brave and going, you know what? Like Shaz said, I never would have done that, but I'm going to give it a try. You know, being brave and getting stuck in is so important.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think about when you're at that time when you're thinking about quitting and it all seems really scary, you know, what we're all worried is about how much what we're losing. You know, you're constantly thinking, oh, I'm going to miss this. I'm going to miss that. I'm going to lose this. I'm going to lose that. And, you know, we don't think about all those things that we're going to be gaining. And it is very much about taking those gaps and, as you say, filling them with new things, new experiences, new ways of connecting, you know, new ways of getting out of your comfort zone. You know, one of my New Year's resolutions for the last few years has been to try more and more new things, you know, because we don't have a huge amount of time. You know, we're sort of, I had, if you read The Sober Diaries, you'll know I had breast cancer 8 years ago. And as a result, I don't feel immortal anymore. You know, I am very conscious that, you know, the thing about breast cancer is it can come back at any point. You know, it could, you know, you do have to realize that you are mortal and you don't have forever. And you need to just cram as much as you can into the time that we have. Sorry, that's a bit of a downer, but
no, it's not. It's absolutely not. And your honesty in the book, it's just fantastic. And you know, it will just help and inspire so many other women that read it. Talking about that and cramming everything in, I know our discussion today is it's over Zoom as we record, and you're based in Scotland. This coming weekend, we've still got a couple of places, you know, on the OTI Ben Nevis High, Claire.
Ah, you?
This weekend. Depending how far you are away.
In fact, that's a really good point, Shaz. Can you sort that will out before Ben Nevis weekend?
Yeah.
Please.
I know I said try new things and get out of your comfort zone, but that's a little bit far out of my comfort zone. It's big. Nevis.
I can't do it, Claire, because obviously I'm getting married next week and therefore I can't. Yeah. And Jem, otherwise I'd be there. Too fair, I would actually. But otherwise I would be there.
Are you climbing Ben Nevis?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am. I was going to say that I'm leading this whole expedition, not physically leading it. We bring in professionals that are qualified mountain guides that have got maps and first aid kits, you know, and all that shiz. But yeah, it's an OTI event. In fact, there's some people on this call who are doing it, and we've had members. Somebody's already landed from America. We've got members flying in from Ireland. We've got members. Hello, waving on the call here, coming in from France. There's about 30 of us, 25, 30. And the one thing everybody's got in common is the fact that at whatever level or for whatever reason, people have said, just taking a break from alcohol. I am currently alcohol free. I am not drinking. And we've got people that are in, you know, the first few weeks. We've got people that have been doing this for a few years. And regardless of where people are, everybody's got the anxieties and the nerves. And it's like the UK's highest mountain. And God, who are these weirdos off the internet that I'm going to be spending the weekend with? Me, actually. So don't worry about that. Everything's fine. Everything's fine.
It's going to be amazing. What fun.
It is. It's going to be really good, but it's doing things that people have never done before. It's a really big deal. And that could be, it could be climbing Ben Nevis with a load of friends that you've met over Zoom in a sober community. It can be picking up your knitting needles again. We've got another member of the community that found her love of crocheting again, because she stopped drinking. We've had a chap called Paul Locke, who's been on the podcast before.
This story,
yeah. it's like a film script. He stopped drinking, discovered he could paint, Claire, and his stuff now just sells worldwide at the most phenomenal prices. And he's just such a talent.
Insane.
And
amazing.
Oh, it's just so good. So good.
Yeah, you know, exercise is such a godsend as well when you're in the early days of quitting, because, you know, you need sort of, you know, we always talk about the toolbox, don't we, of all the different things that you can turn to when you're having a craving. And exercise is a great one, because, you know, it's very difficult to think about having a glass of wine when you're in a spin class or when you're halfway up Ben Nevis. You know, it's really the last thing on your mind. You sort of want to get, I mean, I found it really helped to get away from, you know, the triggers, the things that made you think about drinking. So, you know, if I was having really bad cravings, I would go out for a walk with my headphones on and listen to an audiobook. Because then I was away from the fridge, I was away from sort of, you know, anything that reminded me of booze, and I was moving and I wasn't able to think about it because I was concentrating on a story, and it just gave my head a bit of a break. And, you know, at whatever level you want to exercise, just getting moving and getting away from, you know, those alcohol associations is such a great thing to do, as well as being very good for you, obviously.
We're just going to take a quick break from this fabulous episode of Over the Influence with the one and only Claire Pawley. Oh, yeah. She's not just been on the podcast once. She's been on the podcast twice. She's a superstar author and she's right here. Look, I need to stop that because I could talk about Claire Pawley forever and we need to get back to her. It is going to be quick today because it's just me recording this middle bit because Sharon is currently, well, I hope, nearly at the top of Ben Nevis. It's our OTI trek up the UK's highest mountain this weekend, and Sharon is there with 30 Over the Influencers. They are currently trekking to the top. If you fancy doing stuff like that, we've got one more event this year. It's in the two more events this year, actually. We're going to Edale, which is just south of Manchester, to do the Edale Killer Loop. It's actually not as bad as it sounds, but you can tell your mates that you completed the Killer Loop and it does sound impressive. And we're also going down to Wales, Penifan. I'm really sorry to any Welsh listeners who are offended by my pronunciation there. But we've got two more walks this year, and we will, of course, be doing more OTI events next year. They're not all walking ones. We do pizza and podcasting, for example. But the walking ones, if you can do it, they are absolutely incredible. You know, you give up alcohol and you achieve things that you never thought possible. I'm really hoping that loads of our Over the Influencers who have tackled Ben Nevis this weekend make it to the top. We do the Edales, we do the Penny Fans, but this year, Ben Nevis has been done. Scafell Pike, England's highest mountain, has been completed. We've done Snowdon with Over the Influence. Honestly, the big ticket ones, we love ticking them off and we love doing it together. It's not just about the achievement of getting to the top. It's about the conversation. It's about the chat. It's the fact that we're all there. And the reason that we're all there is because of this podcast and Alcohol Free Life. These events are for our members. If you would like to join us, it's £20 a month or £200 a year for your membership. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. You know what? I'm going to go because obviously we've got to get back to Claire Pawley, but also I just want to check in with Shaz. Let me drop her a quick text. And hopefully I'll be able to report in by the end of this podcast. They've all made it to the top safely. Right, let's get back to the episode with Claire. Claire, now that you've made your hobby into your career with the writing, what do you do for your hobby now?
It's still my hobby as well. I mean, I do what they say, don't they, that if you can turn your passion into your job, then you never
work a day in your life.
You know, and you think, but actually it's very
true.
You know, I work 7 days a week, and I went on holiday recently. I went away with the family to Turkey for a week, which was amazing. But I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning so I could write for two or 3 hours before anybody else woke up. Not because I had to, although actually I did have a deadline. But, you know, I really loved it. It was that beautiful, quiet time of the day when it's just me and my laptop. And, you know, it doesn't feel like work. So yes, it's still my hobby as well. Although I love stories in all forms. So I talked earlier about theatre. You know, that's another hobby of mine, and cinema. You know, so I love consuming stories in terms of books, theatres, you know, movies, any form of storytelling, I guess, is my hobby.
It's amazing to hear further on in sobriety how it does become normal. You know, we talk a lot in the community to our members that are in the early days. It's really funny, actually, because they come in and they go, yeah, all right, yeah, whatever, you talk about it being life-changing, yeah, whatever. And some people genuinely say that, we don't believe you. Then you get to 100 days, and you mentioned this earlier on, Claire, and it does start to tip and it does start to change. And then, you know, you're coming up for 9 years, alcohol-free, Ben's now at 3, I'm approaching 5. It becomes your new normal. And you, in many ways, you know, I don't know about you, but I look back and I think I wouldn't go back to that drinking life if you paid me, because you've got freedom. You've got a whole new world. You've got so much more to be doing. You know, listening to you talking about the absolute joy of getting up and writing for a couple of hours on a holiday in Turkey at 5 o'clock in the morning, because you can, because you're not hanging, because you didn't, you know, blow it the night before. What a fantastic place to be in. But it does come, doesn't it? It does come. It's not awful forever. It's hard at first, but it does change.
It really does. And you know, it takes a while, because if you think about how many years we spent drinking and training our brains to believe that that was the only way to relax and that was the only way to have fun, and it just takes a while to unpack that. But it really, really does happen, and it keeps getting better. I mean, that's the upside of it taking so long, is it means that, you know, even 3 years down the line, you still find that, you know, that year is better than the year before, and you know that the next year will be better again. So, you know, it doesn't stop, actually, which is amazing. And I think the things that have transformed my life the most is the peace. I'm sure you'll understand what I mean when I talk about sort of, you know, monkey brain. You know, I spent so many years just thinking about drinking, you know, that voice constantly going, so am I going to drink? How much am I going to drink? You know, should I, you know, perhaps I shouldn't drink. Maybe I should do, you know, and it just went on and on and on. And it was exhausting. And just having that peace now, having a sort of, you know, not having that voice in your head is just, you know, is still a joy. And I still remember those days of not, you know, of not ever feeling calm. And the calm I have in my life now is just, you know, is fabulous. Do you find that too?
Oh, 100%. I didn't know calm was a thing. Yeah. I didn't know I could be quiet. And this is the, you know, the person you're speaking to now, this is the quiet version of me. I always thought I was this shrieking extrovert that just, Ben, stop laughing, that just made constant noise and like quite angry all the time and just never settled. And that noise about, you know, the drinking and will there be enough drink and who am I going to drink with and when am I going to do it and what if it runs out and how am I going to do it tomorrow and I feel like shit, so I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll start drinking again. Even just saying that out loud just makes me go, oh God.
Yeah, and it was constant. And actually the corollary of that as well, which is something I really don't miss at all, is the fact that you're constantly wishing your life away.
Yeah.
You know, you spend your whole time thinking, you know, I can't wait till the weekend. I can't wait till this hangover goes. I can't wait till I can open another bottle. I can't wait till so. And as a result, you're never appreciating the time that you're in. And unless you've got a glass in your hand, in which case you're not really appreciating it either, because everything, you know, you're numbing everything. So, you know, and I was wishing my life away all the time. And, you know, which again, coming back to the point of, you know, we don't have that much time to spend, you know, I mean, I talk to so many people who are still trying to moderate and, you know, say, well, I only drink at weekends and, you know, so that's not so bad. And I say, well, no, that isn't so bad. But do you find that on Monday you're thinking, I can't wait till it's Friday? You know, are you spending Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday just hoping they're going to go as quickly as possible so you can get to Friday? And if so, that's, you know, that's 5/7 of your life that you're wishing away. And why do that? You know, it's great feeling like you can just enjoy the moment that you're in and not have to constantly look at the sort of, you know, what's coming next.
Claire, can we talk about society? Because I think that, you know, things are definitely changing and at a rapid pace. At the same time, we're nowhere near there yet with removing alcohol as a positive lifestyle choice that people pat you on the back for, like giving up smoking. You know, we're still a long way off that. And I say that because we know someone who listens to the podcast and is very much in the public eye. Let's call them secret A-lister. It's glamorous. But I've seen the emails today, Shaz, that you've been going back and forth, because we said, you know, amazing that you're coming up to a year alcohol free. Would you like to share your story on the podcast? And they've come back and very politely said, look, I would love to. I'd absolutely love to. But I don't trust that my story will be told in the British press, essentially. I worry that if I tell my story to you, and she's not worried about telling a story to us, you know, more than happy. She listens every week, but she's worried that something might get picked up. And then secret drink shame of
my drinking hell, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that then becomes the story. which is a, I think we can sometimes get a bit distracted in our alcohol-free, happy, joyful bubble here. We're talking to people every week who, yeah, okay, some people have had some real low moments and will happily openly admit that they've had rock bottom moments, that that was the reason they decided to change their drinking. But in general, our conversations are positive. They are upbeat. They are forward looking. They are celebrating the wonderful things, all the things that you gain, Claire, not the things that you lose. So I think sometimes we can get, it was just a bit of a reminder today that that's still, that we aren't there as a society.
No, that's why, I mean, I did a TED talk a few years ago called Making Sober Less Shameful, which was all about that and all about the fact that, you know, it isn't like giving up smoking. It is, you know, it's so often when you tell somebody you're quitting smoking, you know, everybody congratulates you. When you tell them you quit drinking, they still quite often they assume there's something wrong with you. You know, it's like, why did you have to do that? You know, nobody, it's, you know, it, I would love it to get to the point where it was just accepted that it was a really positive choice and there didn't have to be a negative reason why you had to, you know, you chose to quit. It was just, you know, you people just accept that that's a really positive way to live your life. And we are, you know, we are getting closer to that point. But, you know, I still think there's, you know, there's still a lot of stigma and there's still a lot of shame. And, you know, if anybody's feeling like that, I do, you know, do look up that TED talk, which is on YouTube. And yeah, and I talk about the whole, all the language even is just often so negative. So, you know, I have an issue with the word alcoholic because it brands the drinker, you know, in a way that we don't do with other drugs. We don't call somebody a nicotineaholic because they're addicted to nicotine. We don't call somebody a cocaineaholic because they're addicted to cocaine. We blame the drug, not the person that's taking it. Whereas with alcohol, we stick a label on the addict in a way that you don't with anything else. And it just feels like somehow you're being blamed. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous, why anonymous? Why again, it's all about shame, recovery, disease. You know, it all feels really negative still. And it is changing. It really is changing. But yeah, I think it's I think the press still use all that terminology, and everybody loves a rock bottom story, and everyone assumes there must be one. So, you know, so if you're a celebrity and you tell, you know, the press get wind of you having quit drinking, then what they want to know is sort of, you know, how bad was it? What are all the, you know, awful things that you did? Does anybody have a story they want to tell about something terrible you did when you were drunk? You know, I mean, it shouldn't have to be like that.
What has changed then? Like, if it's changing, what's the thing that's changed since you decided to start doing this 9 years ago? And how can we speed it up, Claire? How can we get it happening quicker?
Well, you know, I think the thing that's changed the most is younger people. So if you look at the statistics, when I was at university, I didn't know one single person that didn't drink alcohol, not one. Whereas when you look at the statistics now, 25% of the under 25s don't drink at all, not never, you know, which is an extraordinary statistic, I think. And I think that age group are just realizing that it's not a cool drug. It doesn't mean actually that they're not doing other stuff, but alcohol is, you know, they see often that age group see alcohol as something their parents do. It's a bit like Facebook, you know, Facebook and alcohol are for older people, and, you know, it's just not, they're not cool, you know, and there's still obviously a whole load of teenagers who still drink a lot, but there's a lot that they don't have the same issue with people who choose not to. So, you know, my kids drink, you know, from time to time. They don't drink all the time, but they have friends that don't drink at all, and they don't, you know, they don't think that's weird. They just think that's their choice. They don't think it's because they have a problem or, you know, because they're really sad. They just think, oh, they just don't like drinking. Fine. And that change is actually working its way up, because like all these things, you know, when young people embrace something, it becomes trendy. And as a result, you know, there are more and more, you know, influencers and people who sort of, you know, are very publicly out there talking about the fact that they choose not to drink. And that, I think, is what's making the difference is the fact that it's not, you know, for years it was seen as only people who had got themselves into real trouble and were really sick and sad quit drinking. Whereas now, you know, people who have never really drunk, you know, celebrate it. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Massively so. And just, have you seen the chat box, Claire? You've got a sophisticated bunch here at Over the Influence. Charlotte is a university lecturer. And she said, ooh, there's a student corridor at the university I teach at specifically for alcohol-free students. How good is that? That's awesome.
That just never would have happened in my day.
Absolutely not.
I think also, I mean, something that has helped that happen also, I think, is social media. Firstly, because it allows people to celebrate sort of alcohol-free lifestyles in a very public way. But also because I think young people are very conscious that, you know, if they do something really stupid when drunk, you know, a photograph of it is going to be on the internet forever and ever and ever. You know, I mean, I dread to think what would have people be able to see that I'd done in the past if that had been the case back then. And I think it does make people much more cautious about getting completely trolleyed, you know, than we were back in the day.
Oh, it's just making me wince, don't. It's making me wince. It's like the morning after the night before when you've been out, and this is as a, you know, a grown up 40 something year old woman, and there'll always be somebody, some friend you went out with going, oh, I got this video of you last night on the dance floor, and they'd tag you in it, and you know, they'd share it and set it to public, and you're like, can you just piss off? Just delete it. But yeah, thank God it wasn't there in the 90s.
I think that's partly what has made alcohol less trendy amongst that age group is the fact that, you know, they see those sorts of things and they think that's not cool, you know. I think we have the younger generation to thank, really, because they just don't see it the same way that we do, and that gradually will percolate its way up, I think.
So how do you make that quicker? We need more to produce more young people.
Come on, Claire, what are your answers? Faster, quicker.
I've used three of them.
Yeah, you know what, Claire? It's a really interesting conversation because you're absolutely right. You know, that whole idea that you don't have to have had a rock bottom is something we talk about all the time on this podcast. You don't have to have a rock bottom to decide to rethink your drinking. It's that Desmond Tutu quote. We need to stop pulling people out the river, go upstream and catch them before they fall in. Which I think I've just butchered, but it was along those lines. At the same time, I think it's a really important point you make about, you know, talking about the word alcoholic and putting the blame on the drinker, not the highly addictive, well-marketed, glossy, shiny packaging product that's everywhere on television, on billboards, the cool advertising exec taking a whiskey out of his bottom drawer, the Hollywood heroine with a glass of champagne in her hand, everywhere, accessible, pushed on us aggressively. It's also, I think it's really important to say that whole thing around shame, and I've not seen your TED talk, and I'm surprised because I'm a big consumer of what you do, Claire. So I'm surprised that I've missed that one. But that whole thing around shame, if you have had a rock bottom because of a highly addictive substance that's aggressively marketed to us, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, it's about going, it's taking that blame, that shame away from you and attributing that to the substance, isn't it? And separate. I think I do worry about that sometimes, Shaz, that we kind of bang on, oh, you don't have to have a rock bottom. So what if someone is listening and they've gone, well, actually, you know what? I bloody well did. I can tell you that I had. We've had people on this podcast who said, who's the guy who said that he didn't have a rock bottom, but he must have had a rock arse because of how many times he'd hit the bottom.
Oh, so this was the sober trekker, and he said, yes, he literally just bounced. He bounced along the bottom. He just kept bouncing and bouncing, then just fizzled out like a really shitty balloon at the end of it. No sort of big like finale. It was just bouncing along the bottom for ages, then thought, sack this. This is really quite sad. But yeah, the sober trekker. Go back and listen to that one.
It's a great episode.
But I think the reason why, you know, it used to be the accepted wisdom, and I've had so many people say to me, oh, of course, you can't quit drinking until you hit your rock bottom. And that's what we were always being told. And I think the reason why that seemed to be the case is because we were sort of so led to believe that life without alcohol was so terrible, that the only way you could you could embrace that lifestyle was if things had got so awful that you had absolutely no choice. Whereas the way you get people off the slippery slope before they reach rock bottom is to make it very clear that it's, you know, the other side is not that awful. So it doesn't, you don't need to hit rock bottom before you can embrace it, because actually it's way better than where you are now. And, you know, so I think it makes a huge difference for people in terms of sort of, you know, not having to lose your home, lose your family, lose your job, all those things that were traditionally seen as, you know, the sort of, you know, the where alcohol addiction inevitably led you. It doesn't have to be inevitable, but what stops it being inevitable is knowing that the alternative is actually brilliant and not some sort of punishment.
Yeah, completely. And Ben, you know, coming back to what you said then about, you know, we do bang on a lot that you don't need a rock bottom. Exactly what you've just said there, Claire. This podcast exists and our community exists to let people know exactly that. And yes, we speak to people, many, many people that have had rock bottoms. And thank God they've bounced back from that. Maybe not a bounce at first, you know, quite the climb to get back to it and to quit alcohol. It's so important that we share on the other side of it how freaking brilliant it is. And that's not me going, life is just ace, everything's brilliant when you stop drinking, all your problems stop. They don't. Life still goes on. But it's a whole new way of living. It's a whole new world. I sound like a bloody Disney song. A whole new world. But it is. And that's what we get so passionate about, because not everybody's vocal, Claire. Not everybody wants to share the fact that they've stopped drinking for whatever reason. And it's nobody's flipping business, is it, why anybody has stopped drinking? But I think it's really important that people like us, who are happy to share it, you sharing your story, your TED Talks, your books, the sober influencers on Instagram going, look at this, actually if you try it, it's all right, and it's 100 times better than you think it's gonna be, you know. Okay, I get excited.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's why things are changing, because, you know, more and more people are getting off that slope, you know, in time. Because the truth is that if you get to rock bottom, it doesn't make it easier to quit. It makes it much harder. And the reason it makes it much harder is because all those habits are more ingrained. But also, you know, we talk about the opposite of addiction being connection. And the truth about rock bottoms is that often people at rock bottom have lost all their connections. They've lost their family. They've alienated their friends. They've lost their jobs. And, you know, and it makes it really hard when you're in that position to pick yourself back up again, because all the support networks that, you know, that you would want to be able to call on, you've alienated. So you don't want anyone to have to get there. It's not, you know, it's not a place you want anyone to be in. And there's no reason why you should have to get there. It's complete rubbish that you have to hit rock bottom. And every time I hear somebody say that, it just makes me really, you know, it's like, no, don't just sit there and watch them reach rock bottom. It's just not, you know, it's awful.
I had an argument with the Mighty Duck about that. Do you remember, Shaz?
You did.
Yeah. A very wise man, Claire, said, Tim said on one of our very first Over the Influence Zoom calls, I didn't have a rock bottom, but I could see it from where I was standing. And I thought that was such a good quote. And I thought, like, it made me like, I really liked him anyway, but it's just like, what an awesome guy. Like the self-awareness that takes at that point to go, I haven't hit rock bottom yet, but I can see it from where I was standing. I just thought, yeah, that was an amazing quote.
He lost it with
quote.
You, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And I probably said it hundreds of times since he said it.
Thousands, actually.
He just kind of said it, and anyway, see you later, goodbye. Went off. I was like, that's just changed my life. And he's like, hey, see you later.
There's a great quote by there's a writer called Anne Lamott, who is just brilliant, and she wrote a book called Bird by Bird, which is all about writing and life, and she's a very wise woman. And I already adored her because I read stuff that you know she'd written. And I didn't, you know, then I discovered that she was alcohol free, and I adored her even more. And I read some stuff that she wrote about why she quit drinking. And she, you know, she talked about how transformative it was to her whole life. But she said that, again, she hadn't reached rock bottom, but she could see that she was on this slippery slope. And she said, I'm going to misquote it really badly, and I'm not going to do it justice, but she said something like, I had to quit drinking when I realized that I couldn't lower my own expectations faster than my own behavior. Great. I just thought that was lovely, you know, is the idea that sort of, you know, you get to a point where sort of, you know, you can't convince yourself any longer that it's okay.
Claire, we need 2 hours each time we catch up. An hour is simply not enough. We're out of time. It's flown. And I'm gutted because I know that our community will want to ask you a load of questions, and me and Ben could keep chatting for ages, but we're going to have to go, I'm afraid. But one very, very quick question, and this is possibly a yay or nay answer, and it's also something that Annie, who's on the call, mentioned in the chat box. So you wrote The Sober Diaries like 8.5 years ago. Please, can we have a sequel? Like, please, can we have some sort of sober update for, like, years?
Still Sober Diaries.
There's still more Sober Diaries. That'll do. There's your title.
You know what? I would... I'm worried it would be, it just wouldn't be as interesting to read because, you know, somebody's life being happy and sorted is just I worry I would bore everybody. But
Claire Pooley, you wouldn't bore anybody. Hands down, you wouldn't bore anybody. It would be absolutely amazing.
Somebody actually asked me the other day, they said, would I go back to writing nonfiction? And I said, actually, in a way, I hope I don't, because I started writing The Sober Diaries because my life was in a complete mess. And I it was my therapy. It was the only way I could make sense of what I was going through. And I think what would drive me to write nonfiction again is some other form of trauma. You know, if something awful happened in my life, I would have to write about it. That's the only way I could get through it, rather than drinking, whatever, I would have to write. So in that instance, I absolutely would write a sequel about what's happening in my life now. But I don't think I could write. I don't think I could write in the same way about life being great. It would sort of.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. No, and we don't want any trauma, so no, we can just put some more levels on there. Hold then.
Yeah. I don't want to have any trauma. So,
as always, Claire Pooley, it has been an absolute pleasure. Before you go, please give all the books you've written a quick plug and tell people where they can find more information about you and what you do.
Oh, well, The Sober Diaries, my first book. And since then, I've also published The Authenticity Project and The People on Platform 5, which are both novels. Feel-good novels. So if you're looking for some escapism and something to make you smile, then try that. And a new one coming out next year is called How to Age Disgracefully, which is actually fiction, but based very much on many people I know.
Claire, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure. I've loved chatting to you guys, and lots of love to all of you. Thank you.
What an incredible episode with Claire Pooley. Right, my phone's just binged. Oh, I'm dead, said Sharon, just off mountain. Everyone alive. Fabulous. They've made it. Over the Influence has ticked another one off. They have just completed Ben Nevis, the UK's highest mountain. And not only have they completed Ben Nevis, the UK's highest mountain, but it is a truly international team who've gone up Ben Nevis today. We've had people fly in from France, from Gibraltar, from America, from other places that I can't remember off the top of my head, but people have flown in from literally all over the world to be there at this event because, of course, this podcast is listened to all over the world. If you would like to join the Over the Influence community, you get to do really cool events like the Ben Nevis trip. But it's not just about that. It's that everyday support that you get from OTI. We love that this podcast is listened to across the globe. It's a free resource. Of course, it will always be free. But we love the kind of daily stuff that people post in our forum, for example. We've got daily Zoom calls that happen, and we've got calls that happen at all different time zones to make sure that everyone can feel included and involved in those Zoom calls as well. It's the connections that you make through OTI chat. You know, today, the Ben Nevis team, people who have met for the very first time, they'll connect through OTI chat now, and hopefully they'll start to build some really long-lasting, beautiful friendships. That's what Over the Influence is all about. It's about connecting with people who are doing this thing too, because you know what? It isn't easy. You know, removing alcohol, it can be a really, really difficult thing to do. Having said that, it becomes easier when you've got people who are on your team, who are on your side, who are in exactly the same boat as you are, trying to achieve exactly the same things. If you would like more information about Over the Influence, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk. That's overtheinfluence.co.uk. And if you join us, then we might be seeing you in Wales for Pen a Fan. Again, sorry if the pronunciation's wrong. Could be seeing you in Manchester, just south of Manchester. Edale, the Edale Killer Loop, one of my all-time favourite walks. I feel like that's our kind of OTI home walk. You know, it's like a home fixture, Edale, because I've been there loads of times with loads of different OTI members. If you want to join us, overtheinfluence.co.uk. That's overtheinfluence.co.uk. Thank you for joining us this week. There's a really, really special episode next week, because Sharon Hartley is going to be very close to 5 years alcohol-free. So have a great week, and hope to see you then.